Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Hinterland Story Hour. This is a review show where we talk about stories, specifically stories. Not if we do video games, we're not talking about mechanics necessarily. If we do books, well, with books, it's all story, so yes. But we probably won't talk about like inserts and cover art on books. Today we're talking about a movie. This is your first time coming to us. We do not care about spoilers, so we're just gonna spoil the heck out of whatever. There's gonna be some progression so that if there are any like wow moments, they might come through, but we don't really care, so you've been warned. Today I'm sitting with my good friend Adam, who is the first time being on any of my podcasts. I've been on two or three of his.
Yep.
Now, and today I actually have my mic available, so we're going to do a podcast with me on my show. It's amazing. He does a lot of movies on his show, so if you want to just introduce yourself and your show.
Hello, I am Adam. I'm known as the Naughty Guy, Adam J. I have a podcast called Horror After Hours with the Naughty Guy. I do a lot of horror movie reviews and a lot of the more obscure kind of horror movies.
Yeah, you're not into mainstream much, are you? You like those weirdos.
I do like the really weird ones, the gory ones, yeah. The super violent. It's funny stuff because it's, when you're watching a movie, that's all fantasy.
Yeah, and often those really bad ones, you can tell it's a big rubber mask and big thick
gauge wires. That's what makes it so fun.
Yeah, yeah. Like
because
corn syrup blood.
When you get those kind of movies, it really gives you something to talk about, and it gives you something to laugh at.
It does.
And it really is an escape from reality for a while.
Yeah, they're super strange sometimes, for sure.
And the stories can be so bizarre. like Italian Giallo, for instance. Uh-huh. The Giallo movies, Giallo was called Giallo for yellow.
Right.
So in Europe, during this this craze of the, what do you call that? The video nasties.
Mm-hmm.
They would put a yellow cover over them. Because the cover art was so violent, they would cover it with a yellow sleeve.
Oh, like when I was a kid and I'd go to the convenience store and they would cover up all the porno magazines, right?
Same kind of thing.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
So if it was super violent, super graphic, in any kind of a way, they covered it with a yellow sleeve.
Gotcha.
And that's where Giallo came from.
Interesting. So that's a whole genre.
Yep.
Called the Giallo genre.
Hmm. And it's really funny because you see some of these Giallo movies and you get movies like the title is Lizard in a Woman's Skin. I was like, okay, this could be interesting. This might be a reptilian kind of a movie. Nothing about it. This was about this woman going cuckoo. And for some reason, she was a lizard.
A lizard. Oh, yeah. Perfect. Yeah, great, great.
So good. that was how that came around. I was so confused when I first started watching these.
That's awesome.
Over the years, I've really grown to love them because they are just so outrageous. And it just makes it so fun to watch.
Yeah, some of them are pretty wild.
Some of them are really well done, though, too.
It's true. Some of them are extremely well done. And I actually watched The Fog. You did a solo podcast quite a while ago now, and I listened to it, and I was like, well, maybe I really should give this movie a shot. And it was good. I really did enjoy it. It was good.
Another reason I love that movie so much is I actually got to take a trip out there with my wife out to the Point Reyes Lighthouse that was featured in the movie.
Right, and that's one of the reasons I was so interested in it, because you had that little personal anecdote as well.
It was so cool to be in that area and actually see down the coast.
The exact same shot from the
movie. Oh, man, it was... I'm getting goosebumps just thinking about it right now.
It's pretty rad. So I found, since I have this new podcast that is reviewing stories, we found a movie together that we can both agree is good and we enjoy. And I made it scary on purpose because I know that's what you're about. So we decided to do Alien, the original 1979 release, with Sigourney Weaver and a bunch of people I don't remember the name of because I don't have the Wikipedia in front of me and I don't care to name them. Yeah, it was good. I watched it. You didn't get to watch it, but you got a good memory for movies. So we're just going to bounce off your memory. And I'm sure I have a bunch of things that will just remind you of all the amazing things in the movie. Before we get started, quick content warning. Aliens rated R. But it was released in 1979, so rated R in 79 is probably less violent and scary and gory than something rated R now. I would think.
Not necessarily, because there's a lot of movies that you take a look at that were rated R, even NC-17 back in the 70s. Holy cow, those are...
They're way worse.
They are a lot more violent than a lot of the stuff we have today.
Well, this was a big movie, though. It's a big, big release in the big screen across the nation, so it can't be
around
too
the world.
Crazy. Was it a worldwide release?
Yeah.
So, anyway, let's move right along to the setting. So, the story takes place on board the Nostromo. I have in my notes, great name for a spacecraft. It's just a super good name. I don't know why.
The Nostromo was very cool.
It's very cool.
This ship was massive, and they were carrying, what, 200 million tons of ore?
Yeah, some sort of ore. Yeah. I forget what kind. I think it says so in the movie, but I don't remember. It's a spacecraft pulling the ore, so it's actually a tug. It's like a tugboat.
Space tug.
Yeah, space tug. It also takes place on a small moon, LV-426. That's where our alien comes from, ultimately. And they're on their way back to Earth, starring Ripley. Everyone knows Ripley. She's part of the zeitgeist of movies nowadays. Everyone knows Ripley.
Oh yeah.
Ash, the science officer, the alien. I wrote the alien, the cat, the black guy who was always worried about his pay, etc. I swear, in that movie, like 3 or 4 times, he's like, "As long as I get my back pay, I'll do whatever."
The beginning of the movie, he's even talking about his bonus.
I know, exactly. Yeah, I thought that was pretty funny.
I think we should have a bonus.
Yeah, pretty good. It's funny how they inject the company and like the money thing into the movie, which is important. It's an important a plot element, for sure. Definitely.
How much are you willing to put on the line to be paid?
I know, right?
I mean, that's basically what it's coming down to.
Yeah. The movie kind of talks around the whole... like, if you're making lots of money, what are you willing to do?
Exactly.
Because there's some wild things they're going to ask you to do. The company will ask you to do things. I'm sure there's a lot of people in real life in that situation, you know?
When they step off the ship and they get onto the moon.
Right. Well, I'll go ahead and read my synopsis. It's somewhat long, but not terrible.
Oh, no, go for it.
There may be a joke or two hiding in there. I tend to... inject just like random funny quips that I think of while I'm writing certain things, and then I forget what's in there. So if I say something off color, you know why.
I dig off color.
There you go. It says the crew is awakened early by Mother, which is the AI. I didn't write that, but that's the ship AI, during a trip back to Earth in order to investigate a distress signal coming from a moon. Company policy dictates that any signal be investigated. They land and send a crew to investigate. The crew finds a huge wrecked alien ship. Meanwhile, Ripley deciphers part of the signal and determines it is a warning. The investigation team finds a huge dead alien with what appears to be a wound from something bursting out of him. Kane finds a chamber of egg-like things. When he touches one, a creature bursts out, breaks through his helmet, and attaches itself to his face. When they return with Kane, Ripley won't open the door, citing quarantine rules. Ash overrules her. The alien on Kane's head has super corrosive blood. It soon detaches and is found dead. Kane wakes up and seems fine until he has a small alien burst from his chest and he drops dead in his dinner plate. The alien runs off. Chaos ensues. Lots of people die. Because there are 4 of them left... this is after lots of people die. Because there are 4 of them left, they can't abandon ship. Apparently the pod only holds 3. Ripley gains access to Mother, the ship AI, and discovers that Ash has a directive to bring the alien back to Earth and all crew is expendable. Ash attacks Ripley and Parker literally knocks his head off, revealing him to be an android. They reactivate his head and learn his primary goal was ensuring the alien survives when he gets all gushy about the alien. It's a weird scene. He's like, "I love how it's got no sense of morals, just a directive of primal instincts." It's weird. It's a weird scene.
And as he's speaking, dude, he's got all these bubbles popping.
Yeah, these nasty, like, white stuff gushing around. Yeah.
That's
like
his
white alien blood.
Yeah.
They decide to self-destruct the Nostromo. More people die. Ripley tries to stop the self-destruct after the alien keeps her from the shuttle. After failing that, she has one option, which is to make it to the shuttle. Ripley finds the alien aboard her shuttle. She manages to get it into a spacesuit, jettisons the alien, which hangs on till she shoots it with a harpoon. The door closes, the alien starts to grab the engine exhaust to get inside again, but Ripley fires the engine and makes crispy, delicious alien kebab. Ripley and Jones the cat are the sole survivors. So there's my synopsis.
So there were two big names in this movie, not just Sigourney Weaver.
Yeah, the guy who plays Ash is a big name.
Tom Skerritt was in the movie. Tom Skerritt, I believe, was the captain, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah, him too, yeah. The guy who plays Ash, he's Malcolm something rather, right?
That I don't know. I can't remember.
I can certainly look it up right now. In fact, I have it. What am I doing? I have the Wikipedia open right in front of me. I could have. Ian Holm is Ash, not Malcolm. Ian Holm. John Hurt is a big name. He plays the executive officer Kane, the guy, the face hugger on us.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, Tom Skerritt. I read a tidbit in this Wikipedia actually about how Tom Skerritt wouldn't do the movie when they first approached him.
Really?
Yeah, they were. He's like, no, it's too low budget, and it doesn't have any big production studios attached to it right now. And then, like months later, they're like, "Yo, we got Ridley Scott. We got Ridley Scott, and was it Fox? Is it Fox or Universal? One of those big studio.
Yeah,
we got this big studio, and we got Ridley Scott, and he's like, sign me up. Where do I sign? You know, more money. Here you go. Here's my name."
Who was the actual releasing company? Was it Paramount? No.
20th Century Fox.
20th Century, okay.
Yeah. You. Yeah, and this is interesting. It says, despite rewrites, 20th Century Fox did not express confidence in financing a science fiction film. However, after the success of Star Wars in 1977, the studio's interest in the genre rose substantially. According to Carroll, when Star Wars came out and was the extraordinary hit that it was, suddenly science fiction became the hot genre. O'Bannon recalled that they wanted to follow through on Star Wars, and they wanted to follow through fast. And the only spaceship script they had sitting on their desks was Alien.
Now, was this originally titled Alien, or have a different working title?
I'm not sure. I didn't read that deeply, but it wouldn't surprise me if it had some other name. This doesn't make note, at least not, it's not evident immediately by reading through this that it made anything, had any other names.
Okay. Well, no worries. I was only curious.
Yeah, it certainly is an interesting movie.
You hear that little tidbit about Tom Skerritt not wanting to do this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Now you step forward how many years? Look at the success that this movie's had.
Oh, I know.
Look at the popularity.
Imagine if he had just said, no, it's a dumb alien movie, I don't want to be in it.
You imagine the regret he'd have.
Oh, I know. His career would have just probably not even been there. This movie jump-started. Ian Holm, it jump-started his career.
And Sigourney Weaver.
Sigourney Weaver, this is her breakout role, right? Yep. Was she even in anything before this? I don't think she was. She was pretty young.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this was a big deal for her. Like, this is the beginning.
Everybody who was in it that actually launched their careers. I mean, I hadn't heard of these people before that. The black guy that you were talking about, I cannot remember his name. Forgive me for that. But
yeah, me either.
He was in a few movies, like, early 70s.
Uh-huh.
But it wasn't anything big. But he was always a really funny actor. A good, straight-laced actor.
Yeah, he seemed like a pretty good actor in this movie, actually.
I've always enjoyed his character.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I was pleased. In fact, this almost made one of my top three, but it didn't, so I'll say it now. I was pleased that he didn't die first. Yeah. And I actually made note of that in my notes. I said, black guy doesn't die first.
That's awesome.
Yay, black guy. He lives almost all the way through the movie.
Great, great movie, though.
Yeah, it's really good. I guess we can actually move into our top three and bottom three. This will be a short podcast, but that's okay. I'm good with short podcasts. Let's see. Did you write notes? Did you?
No.
Oh, you sent them to me, did you? Okay. I forgot to write your notes down. I was going to, and then I didn't. I'm a terrible friend.
You are a terrible friend.
You go first. Yours are short.
Well, you were asking me, what did I like about the movie?
Yeah.
Okay, so you said, what are the three things you like about the movie? I said, okay, well, I have four.
That's fine.
Number one, I like the creature costume. It's very original, especially for its time.
Yeah, it's super good.
It was amazing to look at, because he'd never seen anything like this before that.
It seemed to move really well.
And nobody had ever seen that protruding jaw before.
Yeah, it's super freaky. Like, Like, it's unique enough that you've never seen anything like it, that it messes with your mind. Like,
exactly. And this was just an amazing costume.
Yeah, it's
amazing,
like, that's what's makeup. Scary about it, is that it's so foreign. It really is alien.
It is so different that you start to think, man, this could be real. And it just, the way it moves and everything is so organic.
Yeah, it is.
And it's not like the giant queen in Aliens.
Right.
Or any of the other crappy Alien remakes. Or, part 3, Part 4. I didn't like those.
Not a fan of Covenant?
Covenant was okay. What was the other before that? It was...
I can't even remember the name of the other one. The two new ones, you mean?
Yeah, those are okay. I don't mind those.
I see. I don't know if I've... Covenant's
the one thing
one,
about
right?
Prometheus.
Prometheus, there you go.
One thing about Prometheus was they go back and revisit... When they get the distress call.
Yeah.
They go to that alien ship. Yeah. It was the same one from the original movie. Same alien, same busted chest, all this stuff.
Yeah.
Now, that was cool. When they actually brought the story back around.
Yeah.
And it really kind of tied things, loose ends together.
And I didn't realize how similar those movies were, because I've seen Alien, but I was like, wow, I must have been too young to watch it. I was very young. Mm-hmm. And I didn't remember it hardly at all. I watched it just a while ago, and I was like, this is the same as Prometheus, except for no, like, alien
exactly.
C-section thing. That was kind of different. But
yeah.
But so many similar scenes,
yep.
Which often I don't like that when they do that, because I feel like it's just a rehash. Like, they didn't have any good ideas, but they needed a new movie to make a bunch of money. But
see,
I feel like they
disagree.
Did okay with Prometheus.
I disagree with that part, because I think they had taken what people kind of missed in the original... And brought it back to the forefront and said, this is what you missed.
Yeah. And that's what I appreciated about this movie, is that watching it, I never realized how much backstory is hidden in the visuals.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That's really cool. So anyway, go on. That's getting into my top three, so.
Oh, no. I was just talking about how amazing this movie is. Yeah. I really, really enjoyed that costume.
Yeah.
The acting was good.
It was.
Another thing I liked was, this is my number two, I love the special effects, because this was back before time before CGI.
Uh-huh.
CGI has taken over everything nowadays, and people don't even act anymore. They do 5 minutes of acting for 10 hours of movie.
And they act in front of a big blue screen, in a blue suit.
In front of a green screen nowadays.
Yeah, well.
Because it wasn't done by CGI, everything looked a lot more realistic. Just like I was saying with the little comment about the costume, it was more organic.
Yeah.
It had a lot more of a realistic feel. And it wasn't this computer-generated bullshit.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, I do like some of the CGI. They have really improved it over the years. But nothing beats what they used to do in the old days.
Yeah.
Where people really had to act. They weren't looking at a green screen. They were looking at somebody who actually donned the makeup, put things together. They had to act. They had to be this thing. And this was a lot harder to do.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Practical effects, where they can be used, are really good.
Yeah.
Often they're better. A lot better.
And there is no substitute for that.
Yeah.
So, moving on to my number three. Honestly, who doesn't like Sigourney Weaver?
It's true. She's good. She's good in everything. She has a real heavy gravitas.
Yeah.
For every role she plays, she's there, man. It's cool.
She was always a looker, too. Always a beautiful lady when she was young.
She's okay, in my opinion.
Well,
we differ in that. I think she's okay looking.
Well, I don't mind. Everybody's entitled to their opinion.
There you go. There you go.
So, number four... I like this movie because it was really tense all the way throughout.
It was. It has a really dark atmosphere. Even when there's like the lighthearted part in the beginning where they're all like having a meal or whatever, even that kind of has this like leering sense.
You know you're on this, you know you're following these people on this gigantic ship, yet everything seems so claustrophobic.
Yeah.
Like you're in a closet.
It makes you wonder if the tug is small.
Yeah.
It must be.
It had to have been.
Yeah.
But when you watch the movie, they're going through so many different tunnels, so many different long walkways.
Yeah.
And it was just
and
this maze.
There's the scene where the captain has a flamethrower.
Yep.
And he's in the air duct.
Yep.
Oh,
This was very claustrophobic. Yeah, that was a lot of ways.
That was a little like, it was a little reminiscent of the, of course, it came later, but it was reminiscent of Die Hard, remember, where he has the lighter? He's in the air duct, yep. He's a little like cramped.
Come on, we'll get together, we'll have a few laughs.
That movie's so good. My heart is great. Yeah. Yeah, those are all great points. I can agree wholeheartedly on most, on all those, except for Sigourney Weaver being a super good looker. Anyway. I like her.
Who didn't like Sigourney Weaver?
She's good. She's super good. In fact, was it yesterday? Yeah, it was yesterday. I just like randomly started watching number two because why not?
Yep.
And it's great too.
I love Aliens.
Yeah, a lot of people say it's better than number one.
And I was one of them. We always said that.
And I might have to like finish it and really like, because I started getting distracted. I just turned it on in the background. I might have to actually sit down and watch it.
The best way to do it is watch them back to back.
Yeah.
Watch the special editions on both.
Yeah, this one's real fresh in my mind, so I definitely had a good viewing of when I started.
This is the perfect movie to do a podcast. I mean, I'm a huge fan. I mean, I'm a fan of your podcast. I'm a fan of the movie.
Yeah, it's great.
I mean, this is something I'm very passionate about.
Yeah, man. Well, I'll do my top three. I have a bottom three, so those will be some hot takes that you can argue with me about.
All right.
My number one, the mythos is very well told visually. I already said that. The whole, like, in the beginning, I never realized, in the beginning, it shows the big, crazy, like, half-donut-shaped ship.
Yep.
It shows that thing all crashed. It shows the big, giant alien with the burst-out ribcage or whatever.
Yep.
I didn't realize that was all in there. Because in my mind, my young self watching it, all I remember is, like, narrow passageways and an alien with lots of saliva, you know? I don't remember this big, expansive moon that they landed on and all these big, wide shots of the ship in space, you know? How you get a sense of size of that thing? Like,
again, it wasn't CGI. This was all
bigatures, as they call them.
Yeah, exactly. These were actual sets.
Yeah.
And these were massive.
And, you know, people would argue with me. I'm not a giant fan of the newest three Star Wars, the new ones, but The Force Awakens was amazing. I really like it, even now, even though the next two kind of soured it for me. But the first one, still, in my mind, is incredible. And part of the reason is that they had practical mixed with digital.
Yeah.
You know, the George Lucas prequels, the three prequels, the Jar Jar Binks, you know, the ones nobody likes, they're almost 100% CGI, and it ruins it somehow. You know, there's no practical effects. And with Force Awakens, they married the two, and they did such a successful job. So, going back to these old ones, I really appreciate the original Star Wars. The original Alien has that feel, that visceral, like, and real life feel. Yeah.
And this movie can really make you appreciate.
It's true. And the attention to detail is super good, too, with the spacesuits. You can look at the spacesuits, and they didn't miss a thing.
Yeah, exactly.
There's nothing in there that looks weird. There's no duct tape, you know? There's no Starbucks cup on the table.
And this is what I was saying about the alien costume. It was seamless.
Yeah.
And they put so much detail into all of that.
And all the shots of it are done in such a way that it didn't need to be 100% perfect, because they shot it in the dark, you know, coming at you in high speed.
Okay, so that was one of my things that I kind of disliked about the movie was some of it was so dark that you really had a hard time seeing a lot of what was going on.
It's true, and they almost fall into the trap of the shaky camera. Almost. Yes,
almost, but not quite.
Yeah, yeah.
But, see, that was my only dislike for the movie.
Mm-hmm. So, my number two is very simple. The cat survives. Mm-hmm. I just think it's cool that the cat is there in the beginning. And you're like, oh, that's nice, they have a cat. And the cat is like her little friend through the whole thing. And then in the beginning of the next one, it's her little friend.
Yep.
And right up until she leaves, and she's like, you stay here, asshole. I was like, whoa! That's pretty funny.
That is funny.
So, number three, the characters, I wrote, however expendable, are fairly well realized. Almost every single one. There's a couple of the crew that are just like, these guys are going to die, and we're not going to talk about them much.
Yeah.
But there's like, there's a crew of seven or eight?
Seven.
Five of those people are important in the story, and you know a little bit about all of them just by the way they talk and act.
Yeah.
You know, and that's pretty cool to make.
They had a really good story. They had amazing character development, which is something that's kind of lost in today's art of movie making.
And you know what's really good is that they concentrate on people other than Ripley a lot.
Yes.
For the first whole chunk of the movie, I'm going to say half, She's just a side character. She's not the primary character.
Yeah, she doesn't really become really important to the movie until the end.
Until the end, yeah. Which is great. It's like a story told about a group of people rather than like, hey, here's your woman and she's strong and she's going to be the one. That's how they do stories now, and it's not that good.
I agree.
I think they've lost something with storytelling. That is an incredible rainbow behind us. We should look at that for just a moment.
See, aren't you glad we did the podcast out here?
I know, right? It's a podcast and everybody's like, rainbow, what are you talking about?
We're sitting out here on my back deck at my house and you got a bright rainbow out from the deck here. It's just gorgeous.
It's pretty awesome. So I wish they would get back to that in movies now. Big budget movies. Lots of smaller movies still do it.
Yeah.
But those are hard to find because they don't advertise them, you know? You have to seek them out and watch a bunch of crap before you find the gems.
Yeah, that's why I have my podcast.
It's true. That's why you have your obscure movies that you watch. You know, you're always finding the gems.
And that's why I enjoy doing what I do, is I like to bring to light, you know, hey, this is something you guys missed. This is something from back in the day. You might like this.
Yeah, it's true. So, the bottom three. We already talked about your one.
Yeah, I had the one.
Cheaped out on me and gave me four good ones and one bad one. That's... You're just ruining the format. Number one, this was a big one for me. This is the one. Maybe I should do it last. I'll do it last. Number three, No One Survives. It's a small gripe, but only one person survives, which is like, I don't know. It's so atypical, you know, of like horror movies of old. Like everyone dies except for one person. That's it. You know, it's such a trope. I kind of wish they had broken the trope a little. Maybe one person got it in a different lifeboat and went somewhere else. Anything, you know, but...
Yeah, but everybody kind of stayed and fought the creature to the end.
Though. It's true. It's true. Number two, we're going in reverse.
it's fine.
I wrote, how much saliva does that alien have?
Obviously an endless supply, because they went through a lot of KY jelly for like all this.
Teeth being bared and liquid just pouring out of it. Like somebody had like a bottle and they're pouring water out through alien's mouth.
If you watch the making, that was all KY jelly.
Was it? Yes. Oh, that's why it moves in such a way.
It just slowly drips. And gross. It looks like real saliva.
That's pretty funny.
But it was KY jelly and it was warmed up to make it look like liquid.
So it moved faster, yeah. Yeah. So, number one, the flashing blue lights drove me wild. I didn't like them at all. Wild nuts. Drove me nuts. I didn't like them. Okay. So many. And it's like, they didn't work for me. It was like...
I think it was actually used to kind of draw your attention somewhere else, rather than to see what's happening.
Well, here's the problem is, I feel like when watching a movie, you've heard of suspension of disbelief.
Yeah.
It brought me out of that. Primarily because there's an emergency and the ship is kind of damaged by this alien. We can assume that's why there's lights. Right behind Ripley, there's a yellow spinning light, a warning light, and there's like alarms blaring and flashing strobe lights on her face, but you never see them and you don't know why they're there. Why in an emergency is it black with flashing lights? You know what I mean? It doesn't make sense. And if I were on a ship and there was an emergency, there would be emergency lights and not flashing strobes that disorient you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true.
And there's no source for them, and they happen all the time. In fact,
a lot of those were supposed to be lasers.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't realize that. But either way, at the very end, when she's in the lifeboat, right? Mm-hmm. She's in the pod, and the alien's there. The pod's fine. It's not malfunctioning. She's just floating away in space, but as soon as she sees the alien, flashing lights. It's like there's no reason for them at that point, but they still happen. And I realize what they're trying to do, but it just kind of ruined it for me. That was a big one
I think they're probably trying to build more suspense.
Yeah, certainly. Certainly that was the reason, but it just, I don't know. I feel like a red light that drops out of the ceiling and flash red light would make more sense. Then you can look at it and go, oh, there's an emergency. There's a flashing red light that says, hey, warning. But these, like, strobes, these dislocated strobes from nowhere that you can see, just that bothered me. That was a big one for me. That's our top and bottom three. Let's move on. Just quick note. Quick societal note, which I don't know if you do these on your podcast much, but
you gotta listen to my podcast once in a while.
I know. I do once in a great while. Jeez. My wife and I talk about society and things of that nature. I'll just read this out. I thought this was interesting. It said, Ripley is often upheld as the right way to write a female character, and I have to say that I agree. With one stipulation, she acts and behaves just like a man would. This works for her since the story really isn't about... It's about how people defeat an alien. It's not a love story or a drama, you know. It's an alien that attacks people and how they deal with that. And she's an officer, you know. She's supposed to be responsible, so it works. But if it was like a 20-episode TV show about human interaction, which is the only way you can do those generally, she would fail as a character, in my opinion, because she would act just like a man the whole time. And nobody wants to see a female...
Act butch.
Act like a dude.
Yeah.
You know, for 20 episodes. Yeah. So it works in this context, but it wouldn't work in a longer format. In fact, I haven't watched them in a long time. I imagine watching all, four Alien movies starring her?
Mm-hmm.
If you watch them all back to back, it might get a little tiresome where... Of course, they did humanize her. In the second one, they humanized her. The first thing she asks about is her daughter. You know, and then she cries when she finds out her daughter died when she was 65, because it's way later. Spoilers for the second one. So they did humanize her and feminize her a little at that point because she had a child. But in this one, she's kind of mannish, which is fine. It's an interesting little thing where everybody's like, hey, Ripley's the best female written character. Yeah, but she acts like a guy, you know. She doesn't act like a woman. So is she a well-written woman or not? I think she's a great character, but is she written as a woman or as, like, this strong man?
I think it was more she was written as an officer. How would an officer handle this? And...
Right, and it's true. They do a great job. I'm not talking bad about the character.
Yeah,
just,
no, I got that.
You know what I mean? For instance, she says no. When they come back to the ship, she's like, you ain't coming on here
ain't
with that
happening.
Thing. Yeah. Yeah. She straight up says no because of the rules.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm an officer.
And she states the rules.
Yeah.
And she reads them off one
she
by
does.
One. You cannot do this.
Yeah, and I'm third in command, so this is my ship right now.
Yep.
Here you go. Actually, she was second in the command at the time,
wasn't
she?
She was, yes.
And Ash was fourth, and he overrode her. Yeah. So that's kind of an interesting little society thing. You know, everybody talks about the female character nowadays. This one's written well.
It's
written good. But not necessarily, in my opinion, she's not written well to me because of the same reasons other people think she's written well. You know what I mean? I have a different take, though I still appreciate it.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, so that's what I had. You don't want to discuss anything else about the movie.
No, I think you covered him.
I think Ash is a pretty interesting thing. And
well, he was the first android.
The first android, what do you mean?
He was, well, obviously, it was the first movie. Yeah. No, not.
In big sci-fi movies, maybe.
That's the first time we see an android in these alien movies.
Oh, sure, in the first movie.
Yeah.
I like it in the second one, where she finds out the guy is an alien, is an android, and she's like...
How did they find out in the first one that he was an android? Was it after the alien splits him in half, or
it's after they beat him up? He tries to kill Ripley.
Yeah,
yeah. He goes after her throat. Yeah,
he went berserk. He grabbed the black guy, threw other people around, and he had Ripley down by the throat. I remember that.
Right, and then the black guy knocks his head off.
Okay,
with like a bar or whatever, he bashes him in the head.
And that's when they find out he was an android.
And then white goo comes out.
Yep. And he started talking in bubbles.
That was really well played.
That was.
It was. You know, I appreciate Michael Fassbender as an android. I think he makes a great android. Just his face and visage. Like, dude looks like an android. I don't know, maybe.
And then you skip ahead to part two, you've got Bishop. Bishop was a very cool character.
Yeah.
And you didn't find out until... What, first 20 minutes?
Yeah, it was a little ways in, and they're playing the knife game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He got that cut on his finger, and the white blood comes out. Ripley jumps back, why did you tell me he was an android?
Yeah. I need to finish it now. It got me all hyped up about it. Maybe I'll watch it tonight. Good movie.
And we could do a podcast on part two.
We could do a part two. Maybe that's what's coming up here on Thursday. We have time on Thursday, right?
Let's do it.
Yeah, let's do a part two. Special preview. My wife and I are going to be doing a story podcast on a book that we just finished by C.S. Lewis. It's way different than this medium. I took like 20 notes on it. It's going to be full of philosophy and allegorical nonsense. We're going to put our high intellect hats on and get our monocles and our pipes and be all smart on that.
Put on your Sherlock Holmes hat.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to be super smart that night. I have to make sure I don't drink any beer because lowers my intellect.
No, it actually makes you more approachable.
Makes me talk a lot more.
Not really. You talk a lot anyway.
Dang, damn it. You keep saying that to me.
It's true.
So, I think that wraps it up.
So, before we go, I have a podcast. The next episode that we're going to be doing is going to be called The Bottom 10.
The Bottom 10.
And this ought to be fun because these are movies that we just make fun of.
You actually have notes written for that.
I do have some notes.
I saw that, yeah.
So I was just giving Danny a little preview of the bottom 10, at least on my side.
I may need to write a bottom 10. I'll do that in the next day or so.
And it's just going to be a silly one about movies we thought were just garbage or that was just so stupid and funny.
Oh, I already gave you my number one. You want to hear me rant about society and how movies are written bad for female characters? Stay tuned for his next episode.
And that is Horror After Hours with the Nutty Guy.
Yeah, it'll be good. It'll be good.
So, Danny, thank you for having me on.
Hey,
appreciate
no problem. You can find me on Hinterlands Media, Hinterlands Feed on Twitter. Just go there. Go to Hinterlands, thehinterlandsmedia.com. And, oh no, not the Hinterlands Media. I get it mixed up. I'm terrible. Terrible at shilling for myself. Hinterlandsmedia.com is my website. That's the primary show. It's not this one. This is Hinterlands Story Hour. Find us on Spotify and podcasts, Google's podcasts, and like 8 other places. You can find us. That's the show. Thanks very much. Bye.
See you later.